Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. And I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And today is the second of our Housing for All panels, where we're looking in detail, at the government's plan, which was launched yesterday. And I'm absolutely delighted on this panel to be joined by Mike Allen from Focus Ireland, Colette Bennett from Social Justice Ireland, Michelle Byrne from Uplift, Rob Cass, and Anne-Marie O'Reilly from Threshold. Just before I start, a reminder, these podcasts cost to produce. We really appreciate if you can become a supporter of Reboot Republic and the Tortoise Shack to help us keep producing these podcasts. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, or else who knows, you might have to listen to sponsorship from somebody you don't want to. Sponsors that could fund this, so don't let that happen. Become a sponsor supporter of us. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So I'm going to go to Mike first. Mike, do you want to give us your take? Obviously, homelessness is set out in the plan. I think it's welcome to see the ambition to end homelessness, but I think there are issues in it regarding the, I think, failure to address in particular the flow into homelessness around the lack of action on evictions and the commitment or a contradictory commitment to both expand emergency accommodation and also convert emergency accommodation into own door accommodation. What's your analysis of the plan, and particularly around homelessness, Mike?
Yeah, thanks, Rory. I think approaching the document from a perspective of homelessness, the commitment there to end homelessness, eradicate homelessness in less than 10 years, following through on the government's commitment in the Lisbon Declaration is really positive, is really welcome. Yeah. We had similar sort of commitments to reduce and to end homelessness, I suppose, almost 20 years ago, which had very considerable impact. We reached the lowest level of homelessness ever before the economic crisis hit us. So these things can be meaningful, and that is really welcome. And I think it'll have to drive other things politically. The problems arise, as I think you're implying, is when you look behind that objective and say, well, actually, that's great. How are we going to get there? Mm. And what have they thought? I think you come across a really strange from it. It's sort of not really a strategy, because if it was a strategy, as I understand it, you'd start off by saying, look, well, where are we? What's it? Analyze what's happening. What's gone wrong and what's not working? How do we fix that? And there isn't any of that there. There are a number of sort of, you know, positive assertions that are being made about governance and about Housing First and things like that. But when you actually say, well, what actually are we going to do that's different than what we were doing before? There's little substance there. So essentially what we're going to do is do more of it. And I think that one of the things that struck me about the launch of it as well is there's a real tension in the presentation of it between the, if you like, the Fine Gael side, which is saying, look, this is a continuation of what we've been doing. We're doing really well, and we just need to do more of it. And the Fianna Fáil Green side presumably are saying, look, we need a radical departure. And so it's trying to be simultaneously a radical departure and a continuation as we were. So it ends up as sort of, well, let's do more or less the same sort of things, but let's do them with more money. And doing them with more money is obviously a good idea, because I think we've all recognised that to tackle this problem, we need to invest much more into housing. But there isn't a clear... We've been listening for 5 years to ministers saying money isn't a problem, and local authority leaders saying money isn't a problem. These aren't the problems. And now money has been put forward as the solution without actually looking at giving us a real sense of what analysis has been done to identify the issues. So the other thing you'd have to say, that you identified this really paradoxical thing that we're going to end homelessness in 8 to 10 years, but there's also the commitments there about the new homeless shelters that are going to be built.
Yeah.
If I was analysing what's wrong with homelessness is we've got three times as many homeless shelters in Dublin as we had at the beginning of the crisis. Building more shelters is not a way of ending homelessness. And then while family homelessness has been a welcome reduction during the pandemic, I think it's really not gone away. And there's virtually nothing there about that. There's nothing about children. I looked through the document about children. Most of the mentions of children are in the name of the Department of Children. There's a couple of mentions of TUSLA. We know that the experience of homelessness is doing enormous damage to children. And we had hoped that these would be at least named, be mentioned, and we begin to have a plan. Rebuilding Ireland comes out before the huge increase in family homelessness. So families are missing from that. And then they're missing from this as well. And I think there's a huge gap, and it goes back to that sort of sense where it's a bunch of ideas, some of them good, some of them a bit unclear, some of them probably not so good, but there's no sense of an understanding of a system which needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I was struck by that, and in particularly around homelessness, like the Housing First targets. It's 1,200 over the, 240 a year. They seem quite low to me.
Well, Housing First is a program to help people with high-level complex support needs. So you want to start with analysis of how many such people there are. And that's missing, so we don't know where that figure comes from. There may be more than that, but the vast majority of people who are homeless just need support to get back into housing, maybe initial support to stabilize. Some of them don't need any support at all. They just need affordable housing.
Yeah.
And there's nothing really in there. They're not mentioned at all. So the vast majority, it's great to see the mention about families with complex needs. It's great to see the support, the stuff on Housing First. But that's a sort of an understanding of homelessness, which is that people who are homeless are broken in some sort of way, and we're going to fix them. There are people who need that support. Very definitely, it's great that it's there. But that's not the fundamental problem with homelessness. Our homelessness problem that we have in Ireland, this crisis that we've experienced for a number of years, is not that there suddenly was a huge number of more people who had complex support needs. You know, that's not what happened over the last 7 years, that there was a sudden outbreak of complex support needs forcing people to homelessness. What happened over the last number of years was there weren't enough affordable homes. And that's sort of missing in the thing. So if we're going to build more housing, and if we take it that that's going to happen, I know that other people will speak to the adequacies or otherwise of that. But if we were to say that that's going to happen, the question that arises in homelessness is, how do you link up the person who's been forced out of the system into the allocation, into the housing system? And,
yeah.
And virtually none of the local authorities will prioritize homelessness as a route into social housing allocation because of this prevalent myth. No evidence. In fact, all the evidence is counter that if you do that, you encourage people into homelessness. So that is, you know, that issue of the allocation of housing, how you distribute. If there's not going to be enough housing, enough dwellings for everybody, shall we say, for the next 8 to 10 years, how are we going to distribute those dwellings in a more fair way while there's a shortage? We criticized the absence of that discussion in Rebuilding Ireland. And we'd have to criticize it here. It's a discussion in a sense about fairness, what we understand, how we link up justice and fairness and so on. And there isn't a discussion of that. And we're going to have to be arguing over that right the way through this. It has created some structures where we can have those arguments, which I think is really, you know, the work I do, most of the people here, advocacy work, you don't win. Nothing happens that is the huge win and then you can go away. You essentially make steps forward and you create new battlefields and new areas where you can pursue your case. And it does do that. It gives us this commitment to end homelessness. We will be talking about that and we'll be pushing, and I'm sure others at Threshold and others will be pushing for delivery on that. They'll have to do much more than they're saying here if they're serious about delivering that. They created a new national implementation plan on Housing First. There's going to be a couple of new sort of bodies bringing together people to discuss how we're going to achieve these sort of goals. So those will give us new, if you like, battlegrounds, new places where we can make our argument and push things forward. But when we're doing that, I think when we're doing that, we won't be able to draw from this document to a huge extent. We're going to be filling in gaps in this document, like we've been doing under Rebuilding Ireland. And I think that's really the the work that's going to be ahead of us over the next period of time. And people, which includes myself, who are looking for something a bit more substantial here, some explanations and some deeper analysis of what's gone wrong and how we're going to fix it. It's not here, so we're going to have to find it elsewhere.
Okay, thanks, Mike, for that. A very useful overview, and I think really pointing out some of the issues that will need to be worked on further. Colette Bennett from Social Justice Ireland, what's your analysis of the plan?
It is better than rebuilding Ireland, which is saying literally nothing. I think there's some things to welcome. So, for example, on the affordability side, the one thing that we would welcome would be the local authority affordability scheme. So that addresses both supply side and demand side issues around affordability. It looks at reducing the purchase price. Now, it talks about an average of 250,000. We'll wait and see. And then that there's that equity element in relation to the purchaser. If that is scaled up, if that is rolled out properly, that may well be a game changer in this space. However, the focus tends to be is around the private sector. So when they try to plant those kind of principles into the private sector, it doesn't work, because what they're missing when we look at the first home scheme, which is essentially a rebranding of the shared equity from the Affordable Housing Act, we see that there is nothing on the supply side to curtail the actual purchase price to bring that down to any sort of affordable level. So what you have is the state intervening. You've got a household that is set to build up its 10% deposit, if it can do that in the private rented sector, if they're living at home. And then they get the maximum mortgage they can get from the central bank regulated entities. And then the state steps in to fill the gap, to build in that difference, and they get a second charge. So that is fundamentally flawed, because what it's saying is the state is essentially tacitly agreeing that homes are unaffordable. They're unaffordable at the market rate. And they are intervening to maintain that lack of affordability rather than doing something on the supply side to bring down those housing costs. So that would be, I suppose, one thing in relation to affordability. I agree with Mike in relation to homelessness, but where I disagree is that the wording in relation to that commitment is that it will work towards ending homelessness by 2030. That's really different to ending homelessness by 2030, because, you know, the semantics involved in that means that, yeah, well, we tried our best, but it didn't happen. I think, you know, 10 years is a very long time for people. Absolutely, you know, there are people who are longer than that experiencing homelessness. And if we could eradicate it in 10 years, fine. But I mean, the ambition should be there to do an awful lot more, particularly for homeless families. Now, I'm not going to speak much more in relation to homelessness, because Mike is the expert in that area. And I you know, but I just want to make the point in relation, yeah, to what the housing strategy actually says when it talks about homelessness. It doesn't go far enough, and it certainly doesn't go anywhere near far enough in relation to prevention. So when we looked at the data in relation to the costs for the state on emergency accommodation only, back in 2019, there was, I think, 165 million spent just on emergency accommodation provision across the 31 local authorities. Now, that was an increase of about 26, 28% on 2018. The homelessness prevention and tenancy sustainment side was in and around the 10 million. That didn't increase at all on the previous year. So there's a real lack in relation to that. We had advocated for, in terms of homeless prevention, an intervention for people in long-term mortgage arrears. So 10 years plus in mortgage arrears, to have some level of an equity stake. We see that the state doesn't have any problem with equity stakes. It's just putting it in the wrong space. That wasn't included in the strategy. There really isn't anything there, other than some kind of tacit commitment or some kind of tentative commitment around the mortgage to rent scheme. The mortgage to rent scheme doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is because it requires local authorities to have some sort of a management system put in place. So if you look at Mayo, for example, for a number of years in Mayo, there wasn't a mortgage to rent scheme to be had, for the simple reason that these were once-off bills in remote areas. The local authorities had no interest in them. They, you know, they didn't want to maintain them. They didn't want to manage them. They were too expensive to do. They were too remote. And realistically, having a transfer of somebody's home, the ownership to the local authority isn't ideal for everybody. Not everybody wants that. Whereas you could have actually made a much more significant impact by doing something like an equity stake instead. Then when we look at social housing provision, so, you know, a huge amount made out of this 19,000 up to 2030 is going to be provided in social housing. The majority is going to be in bills. And again, if that happened, that would be a significant change. However, it's just not enough. So there's 122,000 households in need of social housing between the social housing waiting lists that were published this year and those that are in HAP as of the end of last year. And HAP is a precarious tenancy. 26% of all HAP tenancies that start end early. So there are issues with that. So we would calculate 122,000. So the 90,000 for the next 10, over the next 10 years up to 2030 is just under three quarters of what's actually needed. And that is without looking at new households going into that system. And again, looking at the data, there are about 27,500 households, applicants for social housing between HAP and the new entrance to the social housing waiting lists every year. So that alone is not going to cut it, and it's grossly inadequate. Then we look at the costs. So again, you know, an uplift is absolutely welcome in terms of the $4 billion a year for the next 5 years. But if your target is up to 2030 and your guaranteed costs finish in 2026, you have a problem. You're not going to meet the 90,000, you know, because you're going to have that fallout. So the funding is welcome in terms of the increase for as long as we have it, but it's inadequate to meet the targets that themselves are inadequate.
Okay. Thanks, Colette, for that. Michelle Byrne from Uplift, what's your take on it?
Yeah, well, I suppose, like, obviously there's a lot of like technical analysis we can make here and lots of buzzwords in the plan and around the media at the moment. But most of us can agree that like having a stable, secure, affordable home in which we can live in is the most important foundation that we can build our lives on. And like Uplift previously would have run a poll through Behaviours and Attitudes that said like 94% of people, which is the majority of people in Ireland, want the state and the government to invest money directly in building public, secure, affordable homes. And like the government keeps saying that they are, you know, they care about fixing the housing crisis. Yet we see in this plan, they continue to give away land to big developers, spend most of the housing budget on landlord top ups and refuse to address solutions that would properly reduce the cost or make like rental more secure for everyone. So Uplift is obviously a people power campaigning community of 350,000 people, and Uplift members in the next like week will be going through the plan and giving our reactions, and we'll be assessing it against our own people's housing plan that we already produced, and it was created on the back of expert input, including yourself, Rory, obviously, and a detailed survey of the housing situation of 3,000 members, one of like the biggest of its kind in Europe. And I suppose when you look at our plan, the people's plan to tackle the housing crisis, we're talking about building public homes and ending the reliance on private developers. We're talking about no evictions, whether that be like evicted through properties owned by vulture funds or buy to let repossessions. We're talking about protecting people in rental homes. We're talking about safe and secure homes for those in the marginalized community. So like travelers, people with disabilities, migrants who are often taken advantage of. You know, we were absolutely happy for him to copy our homework, you know, as it was a real stress test. Like the people fed into this for what they really needed. But like, what does the government spin coming out of this plan really mean for people? Like just this morning, just to kind of like ground us a little bit, like my co-worker's sister was told by her landlord that he's selling the house that she's been renting for years. She's a lone parent with a disability with no prospects of being able to rent in West Clare. And what does it mean for the traveller families in Spring Lane and Cork who don't have running water, or the traveller families who are seeing their planning refused by the council? Or what about the families whose homes are crumbling around them from the Mica contaminated blocks? You know, who like they can't afford to cover the cost. Like, is this plan actually going to make a difference to real people's lives, or is it just going to line the pockets of private developers? like year on year, we see plans released and all of that. We've enough to wallpaper the walls of the Dáil at this stage with the amount of plans that we have. But like the nub of the problem is that we're not building enough public homes, and instead we're letting private investors and landlords dictate supply and the market. And I know we've been shouting from the rooftop for years, but at the end of the day, we need the political will. And like, is this plan really going to change that? You know, there is some potential for hope in there, but it's too vague. You know, where are the timelines? Where are the details? You know, we're not going to be fooled by like fancy design, grand statements and press releases and all of that. I suppose if anything is going to be good, it's going to be won through this. It's going to be by keeping the pressure on, keep campaigning. And I suppose that's the next step of our work. You know, we need to kind of redouble down. We need to keep the pressure on. And I know many of the listeners here would also be Uplift members. And next week, they will get a chance to give their opinions as well and put a plan into action that will inspire action to keep the pressure on the government and make sure, as Mike says, working on filling in the gaps that the plan leaves, and as well by implementing any of the good points in it. Like, this really is a mobilising moment. And yeah, that's kind of my analysis of it, to be honest, Rory.
Thanks, Michelle. And just like as a member of Generation Rent, like how do you feel that, you know, talking to your friends and colleagues and stuff, that it spoke to you at all? And you mentioned there, you know, in terms of people facing eviction and, you know, the reality, or, you know, who within Generation Rent do you think would be, you know, what was the sense of it?
I don't think anyone in Generation Rent was particularly holding out much for this plan, to be honest with you. We've kind of been failed so much by housing policies that we weren't expecting a whole lot from this, particularly given, obviously, the government that's in place at the moment. Like, my friends are just happy if they can find a rental. And at the moment, that's even difficult to get. In Waterford, you know, we're not even talking about Dublin here. In Waterford, the rents have gone up 15% since last year. And that's only if you can get a rental place. You know, we're worried about if our landlords are going to evict us to sell the house. And then if you are looking at buying a house, like, there's not much hope there either. Like, and you know, even if you do, the houses are whipped up in a week, and it's just any angle you look at, whether it's like looking for security in rental or trying to get into the housing market yourself, there really isn't a lot there for Generation Rent at all. We're really just trying to scrape by. You know, we're less well off than the generation before us, and we're really just trying to survive. Like, focusing on the details of this plan isn't really going to inspire a lot of hope for us. We're just trying to get by at the moment, I think. But yeah, no, I don't see anything that will inspire a huge amount of hope in the plan, to be honest. I think we really need to go back to, you know, focusing on that public homes. And once we kind of tackle that issue and really focus on that line, then a lot of the other stuff will have a ripple effect on how it'll affect our generation.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. And I'll come back to you on, you know, what you think Generation could do now in terms of that, you know, engaging in public action around that. Rob Cass, are you there? He's there indeed. Rob, thanks so much for joining us. Do you want to give your sense of it?
Yeah. I think what Mike said about a strategy, it doesn't pass the litmus tests of a strategy, which is, are we doing the right things? Are we getting things done? Are we measuring it? So are we doing the right things? The quantum of demand is missing. So if there is nearly 500,000 young people living at home today, they need immediately 200,000 homes. That is right now a demand for 200,000 homes, not 30,000 homes a year, not 35,000. So on that, if the demand is ballpark out, that has consequences on the supply. Stating 35,000 homes versus delivery of 20,000 homes a year. The question then becomes, are we going to step up the supply? I'm amazed there is no direct build by the state. The state can choose to build on its own land, through own construction companies, all the way through to completion and hand over the keys. It has chosen a backdoor entry via councils to fund private, which is it will appoint by councils buying on land with the developer, getting the profit on the uplift to deliver what is perceived affordable homes in 450,000. Now, I'm quite privileged working in the sector as a developer to know that, okay, that is the state is choosing on a 450,000 home, affordable home in Dublin, that's developer profit of 195,000. So that leads to a secondary question. is that the best use of the taxpayers' money to be spending, gifting 190,000 per home to a developer profit instead of using that 195,000 to be building supply of on its own, be that construction, or regenerating. So I see nothing whatsoever on using the existing vacant stock that is there, which is 180,000 homes or 95,000 homes within the existing. I'm surprised that the government choose not to go with Chambers Ireland's top recommendation, which is extend the Living Cities Initiative to all vacant. What does that mean? That means you'd be getting 200,000 tax grant for first-time buyers or anyone else to spend on your home. 200,000 over 10 years, 20,000 into the pocket of somebody young is fundamentally a huge boost to income. And to have made that choice not to go to regenerate the vacant, to made the choice to go still the private route, leads to the third aspect of execution risk. Putting the funding through councils still as that bottleneck of there is no accountability nor responsibility for delivery. You're asking councils to step up 100% in delivery rate next year just to meet the housing plan. That is execution risk because councils at the moment are a block. Instead, I'd have had a dedicated regional team that has the responsibility, the access to funding to crack on and deliver. So I think my view on it from looking at it from international, then into Ireland, and then on the ground, price growth to continue for the next 5 to 10 years at 5% per annum on housing, which increases balance sheets 50% or asset values 50%. The population growth that we see going back to the demand side, the population of generation rent of the now 500,000 young, getting those homes won't happen. And here's why. The population will rise 500,000 in the next 10 years, which alone needs 300,000 homes. So if you're looking at it, do I see that those young people will get homes today? In 2030, the likelihood is 5 to 10%, based on facts. Namely, you have the 500,000 at home today. You're adding another 500,000 in the next decade, and you're only building 300,000 means that those same 500,000 will be stuck at home for the next 10 years unless there's fundamental interventions. So the housing plan doesn't deliver for young people. That's the bluntness of going.
And Rob, as someone who works in the development sector,
yeah,
you know, my assessment of why they haven't done this and why they didn't go with a massive public house building, and you know, to say, you know, put in place better protection for tenants is essentially they're trying to keep and listen to, and they're listening to the likes of, you know, Hines Investment Funds, the Glenveagh builders, developers, the ones who are building at the moment, who are telling them, you know, essentially, if you do this, if you went and did a massive public house building program, like you're suggesting, prices would fall. And that means we won't build. And that essentially they're kind of doing this thing where they're trying to essentially keep the market inflated to keep the existing, like, would I be wrong to say
no,
that?
No, the market is fundamentally dysfunctional, right? And Hines and everyone else is a player. We're all players in a functioning market. So outside of Ireland, in a functioning market, you'd have all the players at the table, including the state on the field. Namely, the state would be developing building direct. The state would be doing modular. The state would be regenerating. And there's a core pillar. So if I was to summarize it as three players, there's the private, there's the public, state. And in the middle is community development. We do not have a community development delivery vehicle in Ireland at all. It's completely missing, other than housing bodies, which are an extension of state funding. They're still ultimately controlled by state funding. The private sector has a goal on profit, and the state should be putting social needs first. So private developers are always going to exist, but the market is so fundamentally dysfunctional in Ireland. Why are we unique in Europe? It's because our population growth is so high. We also are unique in Ireland that we are so far behind the curve of delivery, of growth, of meeting demand. We have to have the state step in and make bigger interventions. The state is not making that intervention of needed by saying, we would be building direct on state land. We will be building and supplying the capital. We will be building the innovation specifically on say, modular. Modular homes are currently being built in Carlow for 200,000 for a three-bed, NZ, 4 days. Not one state department or council or councillors has gone to that and said, that would be brilliant. You can build 1,000 homes at 70% less carbon, 30% less cost to build. That's owning the supply chain. So, Rory, the market is dysfunctional, and until the state steps in and leads on that and drives down the price through cost and supply. At the moment, because the demand is so far outstripping supply, you're always behind the curve. And that's going to be, it's nothing to do with developers, Hines or otherwise. It's because there's so much dysfunctionality in the market, because the state needs to get on the pitch and play and balance it until the market is functional. Functional meaning demand meets supply. And that's why I'm saying, if we haven't got the demand right, we're onto a hiding for the next 10 years on the supply. So,
cheers. Thanks. Thanks, Rob, for that. Very, very interesting insight. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, Anne-Marie O'Reilly from Threshold, your analysis.
Hey, Rory. Thanks a million. Some of the others here have spoken about the measures for the private rented sector, or the lack of measures for the private rented sector. And it certainly seems clear from the plan that renting is to continue to be a transitional tenure, and that, you know, the focus is on promoting home ownership. If you can't get own your own home, you might get a council house. If you don't get that, well, you might be lucky enough to get a cost rental home. And if you don't get that, you're going to stay in the rental sector. And unfortunately, one of the only significant measures in the plan appears to be the creation of indefinite tenancies, which is something that Threshold has advocated for many, many years. Unfortunately, it's very much qualified. It states the creation of indefinite tenancies subject to legal advice. And the previous government promised that they would introduce indefinite tenancies. This government promised they would introduce indefinite tenancies, but now we see, oh no, that's subject to legal advice. And in addition to that, there's certainly a lack of detail on what that is meant to mean. And it certainly seems to be the case throughout the plan. It's definitely a little vague on detail. So Threshold has long asked or sought the removal of Section 34B from the Residential Tenancies Act. That's where a landlord is permitted to end a tenancy for no reason. We don't even know from the plan, is that what they're looking at, or is it something more? And at this point, we do need something more. We need more than just the removal of Section 34B. We need to look at the other grounds on which a landlord can end a tenancy: sale, refurbishment, own use, etc. Because as we know, and Mike mentioned it, we know the majority of people who are entering homelessness are doing so on foot of a notice of termination from their private rented home. So while we hope we see the indefinite tenancies, a far, far more is required. There's no mention of the creation of long-term leases. There's no mention of trying to assist people who are in rent arrears. There's no mention on recognizing banks and lending institutions and receivers as landlords. So certainly there's very little there in improving the security of tenure in the private rented sector. And Michelle, you know, you spoke about the generation rent. And now generation rent, it isn't just people in their 20s, it's people in their 30s, people in their 40s, people who will likely age in the rented sector, and they need that security. Because while the targets are better than previous targets, they're ambitious, if they're met, amazing, they're not enough. So there still will be a huge cohort of people left living in the rented sector with very, very little security, and likely continuing to pay high rents. One of the most effective long-term measures of bringing down rents is by increasing the provision of public housing. But it doesn't look like the balance is there in this plan for that to come about. And one of the other bits that I suppose is its absence that's noticeable, and Mike did speak to it, is the lack of measures to prevent homelessness from occurring in the first instance. And one of the things about the COVID-19 pandemic was it really laid bare all the shortcomings in housing as well as in many other areas of society. But the moratorium on evictions was this, like, it was almost like this experiment that, hey, look, you stop evictions, homelessness drops. That's interesting. So we know improving security of tenure resulted results in a drop in homelessness. And if we're able to prevent like there are very real measures that can be taken to prevent homelessness, and Threshold prevents thousands of people from entering homelessness each year. But when you look at the plan, while it mentions the need to prevent homelessness in the first instance, there are no actions on that listed in the plan. The focus very much is on supporting people in homelessness, which is certainly important and needed and vital, but there are no actions on, well, actually, how do we stop people entering homelessness in the first place, having to go through that trauma and come out the other side of it. So the plan is unfortunately lacking in that. And I'll just mention a couple of other bits that are in there. There is a talk about reviewing the HAP limits, and there's a plan to do that before the end of the year. There's no guarantee the limits will go up, but I certainly hope the outcome of that is an increase in the limits. But that review needs to be annual. It needs to be done the same way reviews were done for rent supplement to decide what those limits are. Rents have increased almost 30% since the HAP limits were last set. So that needs to be done and the limits increased. It can't be, oh, we reviewed it and we decided not to. Like that will not be an acceptable outcome. There is a recognition of the need to increase the energy efficiency of private rented dwellings, and a commitment to bring in a minimum BER by 2025, but no detail on how landlords will be supported to meet that. As it stands, there's insufficient capacity in the sector to meet the current targets. So landlords will need targeted, specific interventions to support them to increase the BER of their properties. And it needs to be done in such a way that doesn't put renters at risk of losing their home, and it doesn't drive landlords out of the market. We all know there are thousands of landlords have left the market over the last few years, and we really do need to keep those in the sector. So the rollout of this minimum BER will need to be done very, very carefully to ensure there aren't unintended consequences from it.
Great. Yeah, no, I think that's a really important point. Just unfortunately, the time is against us, and we have a big panel, and it's been great to hear from all of you. And there's a lot of insights. And I know over the next few months and probably years, we'll be trying to keep push for these different aspects and analyzing it further and pointing out what could and should be done. And it would be great to have you back on Reboot. But just to finish, maybe go to each of you and you could tell me, you know, a couple of things, one or two things in a minute or so of what you think wasn't there, but what should have been in there. Maybe I'll start with you, Mike Allen from Focus Ireland.
Yeah, you have to keep this bit short, but it'll probably be a very long list. We put in very detailed submissions, which I think would be interesting with the submissions that people put in. When those become available, I think it'll be very interesting to troll through what people were saying. But from particularly from what you're saying, I think a couple of things to be mentioned, the failure to deal with the implications of family homelessness, the rights of the children, the voice of the child, the best interest of the child, that's not there. The failure to deal with what's driving it that Anne-Marie was most recently talking about. We know that there's evictions happening all over the country. Most of it are landlords leaving the small landlords selling out. For all that we say, we don't actually know why that's happening. You know, so we need to know why that's happening so that we can stop it or we can manage it, because it's catastrophic. And the more detail about how we would end homelessness. So we've been talking about this idea, taking ideas that people be familiar with, maybe from labour market measures, but active expenditure and inactive expenditure. And Colette mentioned this, that most of the money that's been spent on homelessness is passive expenditure to keep a roof over people's heads. It's essential because people can't be left on the street. But we need to start looking at the budget and saying, what are we spending which are active measures on homelessness. That is, measures which change the condition of the individual, change the condition of society, that move towards ending homelessness. And we need to, there's nothing in there about rethinking homelessness, which you, if you're moving from a system where you manage homelessness to a system where you're going to end homelessness, you have to do an awful lot of rethinking. We're going to do that thinking. We're going to make sure that happens. We're going to drive that commitment home. And as far as we're concerned, there's a commitment to end homelessness by the end of the century, whenever they want to, whatever they want to confer it. But that's not in this strategy. That's just all the work that we're going to be doing over the next period of time. So it would have been great if this had brought us forward on that journey. But we're going to go through that journey anyway. We're going to make sure that the whole country and the government drives that agenda forward.
Great. Thanks, Mike Allen. Colette Bennett from Social Justice Ireland.
Yeah, thank you. Just to say that we, for those who may not want to go through the 160 pages that the rest of us went through, we published our preliminary review of it this morning on our website, socialjustice.ie. So there's about 12 pages there to go through kind of what we welcomed and what we regretted from it. And certainly a lot of what we welcomed come with large caveats. In terms of what we hoped to see but didn't, we also had published back in May our 10-point plan for housing for all. And it was just, I suppose, looking at, well, what would the main 10 asks be if we were to really look at, you know, trying to do something across the five pillars of what was the previous Rebuilding Ireland strategy. And what we didn't see, we wanted to see kind of an expansion of housing first to families. So absolutely, Mike has talked about housing first in relation to, you know, people with complex needs, but there are families, there are children who have similar needs and who also need those wraparound supports. So that's what we had wanted. And while, you know, housing first is being expanded and there are some tenancy sustainment, increased tenancy sustainment supports within the strategy, it doesn't go far enough in relation to actually building in housing first style supports for homeless families. As I said earlier, we asked for an equity stake to be acquired in properties where there are borrowers in severe mortgage distress, so 10 years plus. And they account for the majority of mortgage arrears within the state. They are legacy from the 2008 crash. And essentially, their life is miserable. They are living day to day under the threat of eviction, under the threat of repossession. And as I said before, the state is not adverse to taking an equity stake. It's just doing it in the wrong space. It's not benefiting people who actually would really need to do it. And it's far more cost effective than mortgage to rent, and it would be far more effective overall than mortgage to rent has proven to be so far, certainly. In relation to building social housing, there isn't sufficient social housing within the strategy, and the amount that is being set aside in terms of capital isn't sufficient to even build out that 90,000. So we had sought a greater amount than is included in the strategy. We sought to have a prohibition on the sale of state lands for suitable residential development. And unfortunately, that hasn't been included. There is a much greater use of the Land Development Agency, in fact, and there will be far more transfers to that agency to build out. And they don't have a commitment to social and affordable housing. They you know, there's obviously going to be a private element within that as well. So we will be quite concerned in relation to that. We also sought to ensure that approved housing bodies needed to retain their housing stock as social housing, and that where they did wish to sell. So there are some housing bodies that have specific remits around older people, around people with disabilities, and their housing stock may be old and may not be fit for purpose anymore. So where they did need to sell and to raise funds to buy a better housing stock for themselves, that was sold within the housing sector, the social housing sector, as opposed to on the private market, just to try to maintain the housing stock. We looked to government to do something in relation to supply side affordability measures, and they are grossly lacking in the strategy. That hasn't been done at all. To close all tax loopholes for large scale investment vehicles, that hasn't been done, notwithstanding the fact that there is more in relation to the vacant property tax and the land value sharing in relation to windfall gains. But again, there isn't sufficient detail in relation to that. We were pleased to see the increase in inspections in the private rented sector to 25% from the current 10%. And also in relation to the legislation for tenant protections and long-term leases. However, that big, massive caveat about it being subject to legal advice. Well, get the legal advice, get it fast, because these things are necessary. Others have said that, you know, that the private rental sector is a factor. It's a part of our housing system, and it needs to be fit for purpose, because we are seeing more and more people age into the rental sector and see, you know, renting into retirement. That is going to see a hit on income, and we need to have some level of security in relation to the tenure there. And then finally, we had sought an investment in services and infrastructure to support all housing developments, but particularly in relation to social housing developments, to get rid of this stigma of ghettoisation. As somebody who grew up in social housing, I take huge exception to it, you know, because it's not about the people, it's not about the houses themselves, it's about the lack of support, it's about the lack of facilities and infrastructure around these developments. And that is unfortunately lacking. While there is urban and regional regeneration programs, there isn't anything specific to actually, you know, supporting social housing developments.
Great. Thanks so much, Colette. I'm actually going to go to Rob Cass now. Rob,
what's your assessment? Yeah, so as I said earlier, Rory, three things that are missing. So one is get the demand right, but the 500,000 young people front and central. And I guess that's where uplift and social justice come in and going. The demand has to be, when are we going to meet the 500,000 young people living at home, getting homes? The second that's missing, vacant. They should have extended the Vacant Living Cities initiative of 200,000 to first-time buyers or others. That would be transformational, is a word. But if you had focus on vacant. And then the third is the state being involved directly in build, specifically on modular, and then on sustainability. There is not one mention of the sustainability impact of 300,000 homes means 9 million tons of emissions. If the state had chosen to do direct build or regen, you could have built up a whole innovation of jobs in modular or others that would have step changed down both the cost. So that's homes for 200,000, but be 90% less carbon. And then zero energy, which drives into energy poverty. So the three is get the demand right. That needs to be kept front and central. Second, making sure there's vacancy and that initiative. And the third is direct build using modular and sustainable methods, which would drop the cost by 50%. And I'm saying that 50% is 200,000 versus Dublin, which is an enormous saving. So that's the three things that are missing for me anyway.
I really appreciate you coming on and giving that analysis, Rob. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And Anne-Marie McNally from Threshold.
Or Anne-Marie O'Reilly.
Anne-Marie O'Reilly. Jesus Christ. We'll have to get that one deleted. Fuck that. Tony, you have an edit to do. Anne-Marie O'Reilly from Threshold.
Thanks very much, Rory. Some of these I mentioned already. We really do need to see a targeted homeless prevention. And one thing Threshold has called for some time is ring fence investment in homeless prevention. Like Colette mentioned, just the big difference in what's spent on homeless accommodation and what actually spent on supports. But hopefully we might see something about that in the budget. We were hoping to see something on the promotion of long-term leases. Action had started on that under the last government, and it was disappointing not to see anything about that in this plan. And certainly long-term leases for private renters can have benefits, not just for the renters, but for the landlords as well. But there was nothing there in that. And we would like to see action on rent arrears, and that can be done. Like, we've called for a rent arrears fund, but certainly changes could be made at a legislative level to support renters to be able to pay those rent arrears and ensure landlords are able to recoup that money. And unfortunately, there was nothing about that in the plan. And we'd also would have liked to have seen something on our proposal for the NCT for housing. So there's a recommitment to ensuring 25% of all properties are inspected, but nothing on how will the government then ensure that those properties are brought up to standard. It isn't just enough to inspect them. A lot of work can be involved in then bringing those up to standard. So that unfortunately was missing as well. And just one thing, I suppose it is worth saying, it's not in the plan, but the Taoiseach did mention it yesterday in the press release, that they believe they will hold a referendum on the right to housing in the term of this government. So that is something we hopefully will see some action on in the next couple of years.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. I absolutely agree with you. I hope we do see action. Unfortunately, the right to housing was not mentioned once
No.
in the document.
Not in the plan, no. Once.
And again, there's this ambiguity around it being a referendum on housing as opposed to specifically the right to housing.
Yeah, true.
So he didn't commit to a referendum on the right to housing. He committed to a referendum on housing.
Housing, yes. They've obviously been well briefed on not to mention the right to.
Yeah, I think that's very, very clear that there's a clear disagreement between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil on that. Yeah. And Fine Gael do not want a referendum on the right to housing. That's my interpretation of it. And I think there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that referendum is on the right to housing as opposed to just some general housing blandness that will have no impact whatsoever.
Yeah.
And finally then, thank you, Anne-Marie, to Michelle Byrne from Uplift.
Yeah, well, I suppose like we can talk about all the things that are missing and that obviously very important, but if we want any of the things in the plan or the things that are missing, what we're going to need is collective action. And like a lot of the laws that are in place at the moment really kind of try and make us individually protect ourselves. But I think it's become clear now that that's not working. We need to be mobilizing through campaigns, actions, obviously as part of the Uplift community, where we're like strategically putting pressure on areas needed in the plan to get progressed, or obviously, as we were saying earlier, to direct the government to fill in the gaps. And I'd be remiss that I'd say, like, obviously CASU is a tenants union. You know, that has been born out of the pandemic over the last year and a half or 2 years, because the government won't protect us, and we can protect each other and our communities. We are campaigning for public homes. We're running campaigns against CETA, for example, which would include a new court system that would allow the biggest landlord with Canadian links to sue the state if they tried to improve any of our housing policies. Like, these are the things we need to be collectively organising on. It's not just limited to what's in the plan. It's so much wider than that. And I think as well, we need to have hope. It's very easy to become despondent with like the press releases of the PR spin or the doom headlines or the simple exhaustion from trying to survive in this housing crisis, trying to pay the bills of low paid work and fears of insecure, unaffordable housing and no end in sight. And I think there is hope. Like, we have collectively organized before. Like, we got Dara O'Brien so afraid that he robbed the name of the campaigns for before him, from the Homes for All campaign. So, like, you know, there is pressure there. And like, Fianna Fáil are on their knees in the polls at the moment. And, you know, collectively, we would have a lot of power to put the pressure on to move that plan and fill in the gaps in the right direction so that we can have safe, secure homes for everyone.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that in all the work that, you know, the NGOs are doing, Focus Ireland, Social Justice, you know, Threshold in putting across the policies and advocating, you know, Rob, in terms of very clearly stating, you know, what can actually be done here. And then alongside that, we absolutely, I think, need a public campaigns which do exist, and mobilization to make sure that, you know, people do retain that hope and that sense that something can be done about this. Because ultimately, you know, it is about that combination of factors of people saying that we don't accept this and we want it different, and actually making it a political issue. I think it will be the way we'll get it done. So listen, thank you all so much for joining me today on our Housing for All analysis. Mike Allen from Focus Ireland, Colette Bennett from Social Justice Ireland, Michelle Byrne from Uplift, Rob Cass, and Anne-Marie O'Reilly from Threshold. Just a reminder to our listeners, if you can, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, become a supporter of Reboot Republic. You value these podcasts, we value them. You know, you look at what we've just done there in terms of this analysis of Housing for All. There's no other media which is providing this level of analysis, this input, these voices. Please become a supporter. Sign up for whatever you can each month. Go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Let's keep this show on the road. Let's show, you know, that the solutions, the answers, they're there. And really importantly, to show and highlight the voices of the change makers. So thank you, and we'll talk to you all soon.